and welcome to the Own It podcast, where we celebrate the growing number of women and non-binary ad agency owners and talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising, one agency at a time. I'm Christy Heiler, owner of Cornette, and today we're talking to Stacey Durand of Smart Media Technologies. Stacey launched her own agency after years being the CEO of another. Stacey comes from the media buying segment of the industry, which, as you'll hear, is very different in gender dynamics. That turned out to be quite empowering for her. Our conversation about what needs to change for more women to own agencies is not what you might expect. Stacey also had some great advice for anyone aspiring to be an owner, or just anyone looking to succeed in this wonderful industry we call home. Here's my conversation with Stacey Durand from Smart Media Technologies. Hi, Stacey. I am so happy to have you on the podcast to chat about the ad industry, talk about ownership, and what we can do together to see more women stepping in to the role. But before we talk about business, I'd love to get to know you a little bit. Sure. What do you like to do outside of work?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And this is going to be fun. But outside of work, I'm a mom of two. I have a high schooler and a sophomore in college. So I've been a busy working mom for years, but I'm super active. I love to work out. I love to walk. I love to hike. I love to jog. I still teach spinning, which is a little, everyone's like, how do you do that? It's like, well, I'm going to work out anyways. So just super active. I'm pretty creative. I like to sew still and run a heck of a lot of errands.
Okay. I am super impressed with all spinners. I love to hike like you. I love to exercise, but spinning is just, I can't do it. It is too intense.
Well, you know what? It's the easiest thing to teach if you are a working adult because you just make a great playlist and go. You know, anything else that you have to choreograph. So it's not as hard as you look. And a spinning class is the longest hour of your life if you don't like the music. If you've got great music, it can be a pretty fun hour.
I also think it's really cool that you sew. I love to weave.
Yeah.
I do, like with a lap loom or like a bigger loom, but I feel like sewing is like this lost art, you know, for so many, especially younger folks. My youngest daughter is 9. She is in a sewing class and I kind of want to take it with her. I would love to sew. So also impressed with that.
Yeah. You know, I forgot that I did that. You know, there's a point, especially being a working mom and a career that I travel quite a bit, and I look back on the things I used to make and how I spent my time. And now that my kids are older, and again, one's away at college and the other is too busy for me, a lot of social plans. I just rediscovered it. I truly forgot that I did that. And I had that creative side of me because you don't have time for everything. So that was put on hold. Mm-hmm. So I'm just getting back into it and it feels great.
Oh, that's great. Okay, Stacey, any women past or present that you've looked up to or that have really inspired you at certain points in your life?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've lived in a man's world and my first boss was a female and she hired me right out of college. And she was an entrepreneur. And by the way, even before that, when I worked for Larry King as an assistant producer, my boss was a female then. So it's really interesting when I get that question because I've really known nothing different. And I really have approached my working world as we're all the same. And as I opened my own agency, and even when I ran an agency before I opened it, I was always the only woman in the room. And I never felt like I didn't belong there. I just never thought that. And I do now mentor a lot of young women. And when they do say things like to me, like, I want to be the best female-owned digital agency, I'm like, how about being the best digital agency, right? So my first boss, I would say, was quite a mentor because she was into meditation and very mellow and helped me approach the world of there's big, bad things that are going to happen, but let's approach it calm because being crazy doesn't help anything. So she was kind of my first female mentor. And then after that, I really have just approached that we're all equal and there's no reason to think anything different.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, I think that's interesting. I'm pondering your question, the question that you get asked, I want to be the best female. And I think it's both though. I think that there is, yes, we can be the best
all around. But I also think there is a lot to be said about recognizing and being proud of being a female-owned agency or business as well.
And I forget about that, to be super honest. I forget about that. I'm a pretty driven individual, and I don't really take a time to look back and say, look at what you've accomplished. So I forget that maybe it was harder, right? And I just didn't take no for an answer. And so when I got my start, I already had clients asking me to open my own agency. So sometimes I think about that, was it a little bit easier? I think a lot of entrepreneurs have started that way, right? So it's hard to cut ties with an employer and start something new. But I just have never felt out of place in room. I'll tell you, besides being a woman, where I felt it was being younger. You know, early on, and one of my biggest pieces of advice is be yourself. I remember being younger. I'm petite, I'm 5 feet tall, I'm blonde, and I'm young, right? And I would be in a room and I would be thinking, they think I'm a cheerleader. and I was never a cheerleader. And men and women, by the way. And so I really tried to act older and dress older. And one day it just hit me. Just be yourself. I'm pretty casual. I'm always the one that throws out the funny one-liner to break the tension. And when I just realized it's okay what they're going to think when they look at you, when you open your mouth, they're going to respect you. And I was trying to create something for when they looked at me, they thought something different. And that wasn't ever going to, even if I wore a navy blue Jones New York suit and spectator pumps, and it wasn't going to change what they thought about me. So I just kind of realized, be yourself. And when you start talking about your business, they're going to know that you know what you're talking about, regardless of whatever first impression they got. So that's kind of one of my strongest pieces of advice is just be yourself and let that shine through. Don't try to act a different way because you're in a business meeting.
Your background is really interesting. Coming up through media.
Yeah.
I talk to a lot of creative and strategy leads, but not a lot of media leads that have journeyed into ownership. So how did you come into the advertising business? Take us through your journey.
Yeah, well, I went to school for communications advertising with a minor in psychology. And my internship was at KTLA in the research department. This is another piece of advice I give to a lot of college-age kids. Do a ton of internships, because I learned what I didn't like. And what I thought I wanted to do, I did not like. And to be super honest, I answered an ad right out of college, and I didn't really know what I was getting into. You know, it's funny that I'm going to age myself, but that movie City Slickers with Billy Crystal, he talks about buying time. He's an ad man. He buys air. And that's what I did. So I started working for a media buying agency, and it was small. And I did everything. I did the traffic. I did the attribution. I was an assistant media buyer. And I didn't realize at the time that that was unique, that you could find an employee that would be able to do anything and everything and be adaptable. And we had a layoff pretty quick after I started working there. And they kept me, although my tenure was much less than others, because I was willing to do everything and get my hands dirty. And I really learned a lot that way, right? I was in every department. So I grew up in the media buying space, very young, 22 years old. It's all I knew. I ended up staying at that company for 16 years, which is pretty abnormal as an entry level 22 year old. But I was always learning something new. And I was very intrigued by it because I wasn't just sitting at my desk doing one thing. But I did have that moment where I saw my friends jumping from job to job and getting more money. And I thought, I have to do that. I have to leave here. But I loved my job. And none of my friends loved their jobs. Mm-hmm. And later on, I realized that was me, not necessarily the job. But at the time, I was scared to leave because I loved my job. I didn't hate Mondays. I didn't drive to work going, I don't want to go. So I got my MBA. And what my MBA taught me wasn't necessarily, I'm not applying Peter Drucker's theories of management in my job now, in my company now. But what it did was it gave me a whole bunch of self-confidence, that I wasn't just a big fish in a small pond, that I was a businesswoman and I knew a lot about business more than the gal from Mattel that was in charge of Barbie marketing, and she knew her Barbie Pantone. She knew this silo. I was able to take a product from getting manufactured in China, FOBLA shipped here, make a commercial, put it on TV, set up the website, get it shipped. And I was like, oh, I actually know how to do an entire market entire business. And that gave me enough confidence to stay at that company for a few more years and then go out on my own. But it's rare that you find someone who stayed at their first job for 16 years, but I loved it. And that's when I realized too, to close the loop on that, is that I'm going to, whatever I go to, I'm going to enjoy, because that's the energy I bring, right? But that MBA helped me validate that I was a businesswoman. Mm-hmm. And give me confidence.
I love this business. Thank you. I love this business. It's fun. Yeah, there's always more. It's changing. So like, I think I'm, you know, in like lifelong learner, you know, like yeah. I love to learn, and there's so much to learn, but also, to just enjoy. There's people. It's just, it is a fantastic business. I'm like you. I was never like, oh, I don't want to go in. I was never afraid of Mondays. But
it's very funny. I just got someone who asked me, you're still doing this? Aren't you bored? When are you going to retire? And I said, I'm not bored, because you're retired as an individual. And I said, and so much change is happening. You know, there's linear TV, which is your regular national cable TV. We buy regular broadcasts, CBS, NBC, CNN, ESPN. There's that. And I grew up in that. But there's CTV, there's streaming. We're doing Web3. We're doing NFTs. We're taking people from TV to Web3. There's the metaverse. We're launching products in the metaverse. All of that is new to me. And all of that's exciting. And figuring out how you connect from going from TV to Web3. Also figuring out how you talk to someone about TV these days, right? TV. A lot of people were trying not to call it TV because there's streaming and there's CTV, which is Hulu and Roku. At the end of the day, it's all TV. It's just, you're sitting on your couch. How are you getting your TV now, right? How are you getting it? Is it through a smart app? Are you streaming it? You know, or are you wired in or getting it from your satellite? At the end of the day, it's all TV. So realizing again, like I did with my MBA of my a big fish in a small pond, I realized as the world is changing, I actually know a lot about this, because at the end of the day, it's TV. It's just how you're getting it and the hardware that you're getting it from. But that consumer, that viewer, how do they react to TV? And that's what I know.
So when did your own agency, when did that idea start forming in your mind?
You know, it's funny because I would call myself a reluctant entrepreneur. You know, I think there's individuals that always knew they wanted to work for themselves and they wanted to be independent. And, you know, I want to own a plane. I want to be this wealthy, independent startup guy. And that wasn't me. I was running companies independently before I realized I was even running a company. You know what I mean? And I left that job of 16 years. And I went to a company that I knew I wasn't going to be at a long time. It was kind of a fun sandbox to play in. I didn't want to leave my agency that I worked at for 16 years and do the same thing at a different desk. I took 2 years and I produced commercials and we started a live shopping network and we did a lot of fun different. I wrote scripts, started a radio agency, and we bought TV too. So I had a really fun sandbox to play in. My current business partner was at my old agency and he was just like, hey, let's start Duran Media. Let's do it. Let's do it. And I was like, yeah, I don't think I want to do that. It's too scary. And then I had clients calling and saying, hey, we missed you. We'd love for you to do this. And I realized at the company I was at the time, I was a little bored. Although it was fun, I was doing different things. There is something about pitching, being in front of people, trying to land that business. There is something about holding someone's hand and saying, hey, I will take you through this process. I'm an expert. I know what you need to do. I know this timeline. And I missed that. It was almost like what I was doing was too easy. So I was reluctant. The individual, my partner now, kept saying to me, let's do it, let's do it. And I stepped back and I thought, there's so few people that you want to be a partner with, right? That's like another marriage, mm-hmm. probably more than a marriage. You probably see them more than your partner, right? And I realized this individual was the individual I would partner with. And if he did an agency with someone else, I would be jealous. I would be upset. So I said, let's do it. So we had a pretty soft launch because I was able to kind of slowly leave the company I was with while still officing there and utilizing some of the resources. So it made it very easy for me. So that's one piece of advice I give, like entrepreneurship doesn't always have to be cut your paycheck off and start something new. I was able to wind into it while still helping the company I was working with because I was valuable to them. So I was able to kind of negotiate this ability to help both companies while starting my own agency. And that's what allowed me to be an entrepreneur. And that's why I call myself a reluctant entrepreneur, because I think being the breadwinner and having two small kids at home, I think it would have been hard to kind of cut off that paycheck and start something new. And I think that's what stops a lot of people. So I tell people, think creatively about mm-hmm. how you can start this, right? And it's not always black and white. There's a lot of roads to entrepreneurship these days, I think.
It's a great lesson and great story.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the beginning, for the two of you, what were the biggest challenges? As you moved from working for a company and then owning a company, what did you face?
Because of how we started, we had a little bit of a cushion. So that, for me personally, that allowed me the freedom to grow and to not, the freedom to relax the worry, if you will. But I also had people asking me to open an agency. So I knew I had two clients right off the bat. And so my stress wasn't necessarily getting clients to start and open the doors. At the time, media was a true commodity. You know, I knew I could get the clients. Could I get the media time? Could I get the media time that could compete with these bigger agencies? And so the supply chain was more of my worry than the clients. And what I realized is my name got clients to ask me to open agency. My name and reputation helped get the media too, right? Because it is a risk to sell media to a new agency too. Are they going to pay me in 30 days, right? So luckily I had a reputation, and I never realized that. I had a reputation on the client side, but I had a reputation on the seller side too. And a reputation that we always paid our bills. I jumped in. I was always very fair. And that reputation helped start my business. And it's just me, but I didn't realize when someone gets laid off, for example, and they're a big wig at a company and they get laid off, people stop checking in. You know, I never did with a lot of these people because they're going to end up somewhere else. So it wasn't selfish. Like I got to check in because they're going to end up somewhere else. But, you know, if you're talking to someone daily, you got to still check in. How you doing? Mm-hmm. How can I help? And I that's kind of my philosophy on both sides of the fence. I build relationships and there's a lot of trust. When I pitch business, there are companies that have better bells and whistles and are shinier. I land business because they trust me, right? And in the media business, we buy a lot of media time. They might send me $200,000 a week to buy media time. They're not approving every single buy. They're kind of just sending it. So there's a lot of trust and respect, and that's what's helped my business.
The only thing that kind of comes to my mind though, that I'm curious about is tools as a start, because I have had a number of strategists and also people on the media side that are high up trying to determine whether they're going to move to another agency or go out on their own. But one of their concerns is the access to tools and information and being able to do that. And how, especially from a cost standpoint, how did you do that?
Yeah, no, it's expensive. And so, look, we needed a media system, right, that we could put our media in. And but we bootstrapped it. I think we got one competitive. For the first year, we didn't even have Nielsen. So we would get ratings from stations. right? We'd call up and say, hey, can you send me the overnights? And then we would look back and kind of figure out if the overnights were accurate or not. And so we couldn't afford everything right off the bat. And Nielsen's super expensive. Nielsen is based on your billing. So our billing was low, but we couldn't get it from day one. So for the first year, we were asking favors from the stations. And again, that's where that reputation comes in, right? And they want to help you and they want to see you grow and thrive. So they're going to help you because we might be nicer to work with than other agencies maybe. So yeah, we figured it out, but it wasn't easy. And it took a long time before we got MRI and Simmons and Kantar and iSpot. And it's still a consideration, by the way, right? It, you know, my VP level will be like, hey, we should get iSpot, we should get MRI. I'm like, yeah, it's $75,000. So you let me know how you're going to use it. And I don't think we really need two competitive sets. So, I mean, that's another piece of advice. Like, no matter how big you get, still keep your eye on the costs of things, right? You can get really fat and every agency is one client away from a rough time. And I'm a big believer that I already said that media was a commodity. To be honest, now I think data as a commodity, right? There's so much data out there and we're drinking out of a fire hose with data. Mm-hmm. And CMOs don't even know what to do with this data. And at the end of the day, you can have all these data sources, but if you don't know how to use it, how to analyze it, and most importantly, how to apply it, it doesn't matter, right? So data is a commodity. You got to figure out what it is, what the best data source is, how I'm going to use it, how I'm going to optimize to it, and then stick with it, right? Not jump around. So I don't believe in having a wild amount of data sources. I believe in vetting them all, figuring out what the best data source is for your goal. Not because everyone else is using it. What's my goal? And what can I optimize to? That's the biggest thing. I own a direct response agency. So the direct response in it is that we're going to run media and we're going to optimize on a weekly basis. If you need a cost per order, we're going to optimize to sales or revenue. If you need a cost per visit, we're going to optimize to visits. If you are driving retail or branding, we're going to optimize to GRPs or CPMs. But we are not an agency that buys the upfronts, leaves it, looks at it months, 6 months, a year later. We are on a weekly basis optimizing. And that's what's allowed my agency to grow during and after the pandemic. Because I think what a lot of big marketers realized during the pandemic is, I don't want to be stuck in there or anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to be stuck in a media buy that I push off because I'm biking cruises and we're not sailing. And then I push off again and I push off again. And then all of a sudden, I don't care if those ships aren't leaving the port. You got to start advertising. So we offer this flexibility with optimization. And that urban myth that direct response agencies can't buy first run programming or great day parts or great stations is not true, right? So that's how my business has grown, that I can buy anything and everything a general agency can buy, but a general agency won't or can't optimize the way I do. They're just not structured that way. They're not set up for it. Right. So that data, utilizing that data and react to it quickly is huge. Mm. You know, our business isn't getting any easier. The economy isn't helping anything. We have to be able to optimize and react to what's going on out there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to take us in a different direction. Stacey, why do you think there are so few female owners in this business? I mean, I know that you said that you always had a really great experience and you felt like you could say anything and you felt equal. Yeah. And I will tell you, my experience was really similar. You know, I always felt like I had a voice. I was never afraid to share it. Yeah. That didn't mean though that I didn't have reservations. You know, yeah. I didn't see a model. I didn't see a lot of women in positions of leadership that showed me that I could do it the way that felt right for me and be successful. Yeah. You know, I kind of had to prove that out over time. But a number of years ago, I went to Cannes And I found myself listening every day to this series of talks. It's called Badass Women on the Beach. Yeah. And the talks are great, but it was really the conversation afterwards that just floored me. I mean, it was these women who were talking about their experiences in this business that were just so bad, but that had never been my experience, you know, right. So eye-opening to me to hear, and not just like a couple, but like the volume of them. I mean, I had heard about it, but I'd never heard it directly like that.
Yeah.
And that was when I felt like this shouldn't be happening. And I'm so glad it's not happening to me, but I want to ensure that it doesn't happen to anybody.
Yeah.
Okay. What changes do we need to make to make sure that no one has that experience, right? So why do you think there are so few female agency owners?
In the direct response world, there are quite a few female owners. The interesting thing about the media buying world, media buyers are often women. I would say 80% of media buyers are women. So I grew up around female media buyers. And I grew up in this business. Now the reps were men. Calling a rep, hey, I need to buy this. Are you kidding me? I'm not paying $500. I'm paying $100, right? And so as a 22-year-old woman, I was negotiating. And I was negotiating with men on the other side. And I was their buyer and they were my rep. So I think... And I worked at an agency that was owned by a woman. Now, the one interesting thing is she was a bit of a hippie, as I mentioned earlier, and she didn't like to pitch. She didn't like to be in front of people. She was a media buyer, and that's what she loved. She loved media. Media was sexy. She loved negotiating the media. So early on, I said, well, I'll talk to them. I'll tell them what we do. And I honestly was a little naive. Like it was, you know, it's like the, you know, a kid who learns to ski will go down a black diamond, but an adult won't. Like, I don't know what it is. I was like, I'll do it. So early on, I was like, I had nothing to lose and I had no fear. And I'm like, I don't care. I'll tell them how good we are. Why? If you won't, I will. So I started going to these pitches with her as a 24-year-old. Now there were plenty of more seasoned older individuals in the company, but no one raised their hand. And I heard her passing on these meetings because that wasn't her personality. And I'm like, I'll go. And I just, the way I thought about it was, we've got nothing to lose because we're either going to not go to the meeting or go to the meeting and not get it, which is the same as would have happened if we didn't go, or we're going to get it. So I kind of just, it never occurred to me that I didn't belong in the room, right? Even when I was young, and that was kind of when I was talking about wearing a Jones New York navy blue suit and spectator pumps. So I've always subscribed to the philosophy of, I know what I'm talking about. And also, don't try to pretend you know what you're talking about if you don't. You know, I've also said, I think people are very successful, not just when they lean into what they're good at, when they really identify what they're not good at and be able to say, I'm never shy and say, hey, you just crossed the line. I don't know anything about that, but I've got some tech guys, next call, they'll jump on, right? Not pretending. And people respect you more if you're like, I literally just told you everything I know about that. Now we need to get someone else on the phone who is much more tech savvy. And hiring good people around you that can fill in your voids. And so I do know a lot of female agency owners in the direct response space because media buyers are historically female in every, even enterprise agencies. So in the media world, I think there's a lot of strong females. So I think I've been able to watch that, emulate that, but more importantly, never feel like I was out there alone. Right? Never feel like I didn't belong. But the biggest piece of advice is if you know your stuff, you belong in that room. And I'm telling you, people would look sideways at me. Even women, by the way, who's this young 5 foot tall person? I'm not young anymore, but at the time I was. And I'm like, that's okay. That's okay. I could feel it. That's okay. I'm just going to sit here until I have an opportunity to share. And when I share, they're going to know I know what I'm talking about. So I had the confidence in my knowledge.
I love that you did, that you always have.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking though, if you compare to just general businesses, 40% of businesses are owned by women, but less than 1% of agencies. How do you make sense of that?
That might be a situation where women aren't willing to take that leap, right? It might be funding. It might be being a working mom. That wasn't easy. That wasn't easy. I'll tell you, there was a day where I was in LAX. I hadn't even left my trip. I'm sitting on the floor in the handicapped bathroom, pumping milk and dumping it before I even left for my trip. And I'm like, this is my second kid. I'm like, oh my gosh. Like there's a lot being a working mom, especially if you travel. And I think that that decision, especially any woman, but especially if you have kids, it's a big decision, right? I miss stuff. I also, my husband worked at home way before the pandemic. So I had the comfort knowing that we had a nanny. I could also afford a nanny, right? I had the comfort that my kids weren't in daycare 16 hours a day and my husband was a room away. Not a lot of women have that. And that's what allowed me to do it. So I think that being a working mom is tough. So I think that possibly that's one reason too. You know, there might be a crisis of confidence sometimes. And it's like, there shouldn't be. If you know your stuff, you can start an agency. For me, those were big thoughts of, but I got two kids at home. But again, I was really lucky that I had a husband that worked from home. Otherwise, I don't know if I could have done it.
Thanks for sharing that. I can relate to many of those.
Yeah.
Thoughts.
It was hard. It was hard, you know, and it was hard during it. And it's funny now that my kids are 17 and 19 and I'm about to be an empty nester. It's hard looking back on it. It's because also, thank goodness, I look at, you know, my employees that are working moms, the flexibility they have that I didn't have. I remember begging to work from home one day a week. And the owners of the agency were like, no, no. And I would get one day a month and I would say to them, I will be so much more here on the 4 days I'm in the office if I get one day from home. No one would do it. Now, thank goodness, there's that flexibility now. So maybe working moms can open agencies now.
I think we can open agencies and we can also create those spaces.
Yeah. But I'm looking back on stuff now, being very reflective as my youngest goes to college next year and being like, oh, I missed a lot. You know, I missed a lot. And by the way, my kids are amazing. So I know that I raised them right, but you still have guilt, you know, and you can't have, when you're traveling, you got to go, you got to do, and it is what it is. And I reframed it at one point. I used to have so much guilt and I'd take the earliest flight out or a red eye and I'd take the earliest flight back. And one day I realized I'm a wreck. Now I'm getting home and I can't even like play with my kids and I'm a wreck for 3 days. And one day I said, you know what? If I've got to go, I'm going to take a normal flight out. I'm going to enjoy my time there. I don't have to get up at 4 a.m. to go to the gym. I was getting up at 4 a.m. to go to the gym. I can work out a normal. So I reframed it and said, you know what? This is going to be my time and I'm going to enjoy it. And then I'm going to come home refreshed. But I had to I did probably 2 years of killing myself before I realized, you know what? I'm going to look at the positives of being away versus all the negatives. And that's what you got to do. This has become a working mom podcast.
With all of that,
yeah,
Stacey, thinking about all parts of ownership, what advice do you have for those that will follow and go out on their own?
Trust your instincts and trust your gut. That is huge for me. And I always did that when I was running another agency. And then I did that during the beginning of the agency. And then I stopped for a minute and I had other influences and it didn't work for us. We had a bad couple years And my instincts are strong. My gut is strong. Are they always right? No. But if you have a strong instinct, that's the right decision, right? And, you know, during the pandemic, the beginning of the pandemic, we were a smaller agency. We were owed $3.7 million. Now, as an agency, a lot of money moves through us. We keep 10%. So we don't have a lot of money. We might buy $2 million worth of media time a week, but what we keep is small. Mm-hmm. And that commission goes down the bigger the client is, right? So when I say we owed $3.7 million, we were owed, that wasn't commission. That was real money. That was media money. So I don't make enough money to be a lender of money. So my business partner is like, oh my God, cut everyone off. And I'm like, nope, we can't cut them off because media rates are really, really low. Once you cut someone off, you're just calling them and they're not answering your call. And media rates were really, really low. So I went to the biggest client that owed us $2.3 million. I said, look, the media rates are so low. This media time is going to be so profitable, but you owe me $2.3 million. So this is what we're going to do. You can't afford not to be on TV right now. I need you to make money and I can make you a lot of money. So whatever you can afford to send me weekly, half will buy media time and half will go to my debt. The first week they sent me $5,000. So I bought $2,500 worth of media time and $2,500. And we worked that up to $12,000. $6,000 went to debt, $6,000 went to media time. That media time, I was getting a 5X return. So for every $1,000 I spent, I was bringing in $5,000. It was wildly profitable. And they reinvest the money and they reinvest the money. And I got paid off in about a year. And that employee, that client is very loyal. They're like, you came with a solution. You were our partner. Now, most entrepreneurs' instincts like, crap, cut them off. They owe us money. And I'm like, nope, keep them on. But I'm like, you need me more than I need you right now. Not true. I needed the $2.3 million or I was going under, but I got every single dollar of that $3.7 million.
But right? It's a relationship.
Well, and I took it upon myself. That was one client for 2.3. There was other clients and I took it upon myself to call and to build that relationship and to, you know, when they're owing me money, you know, they're owing a lot of people money. So I had to make sure I was at that top of that list to get paid. Right. And I really presented as like, I'm your partner and you need me right now, because what's going on in the media world, it's a supply and demand business. The demand is very low. The supply is very high. So I can call my rate and it's going to be wildly profitable. People during the pandemic were sitting home watching TV. And guess what? They were buying stuff, right?
Lots
of stuff. So we were able to really grow during that time. And I kept a level head. And I said, I could have freaked out because that was the end of us, right? And I said, you know what? We're going to get this money. We're going to get the money. One way or another, I'm going to get paid. And I was never mad and I never yelled. And I was as nice as I could be, like, hey guys, we're going to get out of this together. Right. So that was my gut instinct. It wasn't anybody else's here. And I had a fight to do it that way, but I trusted my gut that that was the way we were going to get out of that mess and not panic and keep a level head and stay positive, you know, stay positive. Like, okay. You know, I referenced that we had a couple bad years for a while and I didn't trust my gut. We did some things that in hindsight, we probably shouldn't have. And I got negative for the first time in my career. I couldn't see a way out. And finally, after about a year, I said, you know what, this isn't getting anybody anywhere. My agency, my employees, me, my partner. And he was very negative too. And I said, you know what, my mindset's going to be now, everyone else can be smarter than me, but no one can work harder. That's the one thing I got right now. I don't have money to reinvest. I don't have money to buy all these bells and whistles. But you know what? The one thing they can't take away is I can work my ass off. So people can be smarter. No one can work harder. And everybody can work really hard, right? And everybody's got that in them. So during that time, when things go wrong, it's a snowball, right? It's like gut punches every day, gut punches. And when you're losing clients, you start losing employees, right? And it just is a snowball. And we were in that downhill snowball. Mm-hmm. And finally, I just said, instead of taking everything as a gut punch, I was like, you know what? That's okay. That's okay. Because we'll do this. That's okay. We'll do this. We're just going to work harder. You know, if you add 15 clients and you're down to two, well, those two become really important and get a lot of focus, right? And I'm like, you know what? If this is the only client I got, they're going to be the most profitable client because they have to be. And I just got to dig harder to get lower rates. And I got to dig harder to ask for favors. And I got to dig harder to get no charges. That was kind of became our philosophy is no one can work harder than us. So we've dug out of two big trenches. One, you know, that was in 2015. And the second was pandemic. And while we were simultaneously growing and getting more clients, I was owed so much money that we were playing a little bit of a shell game with paying the stations because I owed $3 million to stations. I didn't have the $3 million because again, my commission's tiny. So I was like, all right, let's start three lists. Let's start triple screamers, double screamers, and screamers. And when they get on the triple screamer list, we'll pay them. And I was just, and I would place phone calls and people trusted me. And I said, you'll get paid. As soon as I get the money, you'll get paid. And they did. Everybody got paid. And that created a lot of goodwill with the stations and a lot of goodwill with those clients. So trust your gut.
Yeah. Trust yourself. Believe in yourself. And like you said, you know your stuff.
Well, and yeah, like this whole podcast is about believing yourself. When you walk in that room, if it's all men and they're going to look at you, why is that chick here? Right? Or if you're young, or if you don't feel good that day, or you're having a bad hair day, it doesn't matter. What comes out of your mouth, you know yourself. You wouldn't have started a company,
right?
If you didn't know what you're doing. So trust your gut all the way through and know your stuff.
Yeah. Thank you, Stacey.
Yeah.
I have really enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, good. I have too, by the way.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Own It with Stacey Durand of Smart Media Technologies. You can find links to her LinkedIn profile and the agency's website in our show notes at untilyouownit.com. If you're enjoying Own It, please find it on your favorite podcast app and drop us a rating and review. Those help more people discover the show and join our community. Also, if you're a female or non-binary agency owner, or you want to own an agency someday, join our growing community at that same address, untilyouownit.com. I'm Christy Heiler. We'll talk again soon on Own It.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.